All right, here we are, a Thursday morning, and you know what that means, right? Let's grow together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. It's our weekly call-in show, and of course, I have with me this morning Mr. Matt Workinger. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Pam. How are you?
I'm doing just peachy keen, they say. And also, Rachel Fender. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
So, guys, I couple of things. I've got a couple of things to talk to you about. I wish that I could show you. I took a picture of it, but it doesn't do it justice, of that amaryllis that I got for Christmas and the blooms on it. Oh,
beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Makes your house a little bright and cheerier this time of year, huh?
It does. I wish it bloomed all year long. I hate that it doesn't. You know, it's one of those things. So pretty. And this one's different from the one that I got last year. It has a little bit of pink in it. And so
there's a lot of different kinds out there. So
yeah. Yeah.
Generally, the more on all plants, generally, the more impressive the blooms are, the shorter the bloom window is on that.
No,
it's
kidding.
Kind of like, if it's a mediocre bloomer, you'll get a long, long bloom time out of it. Or if it just has a few flowers at a time, it'll stretch its bloom time out. But when you have these monstrous flowers that are just absolutely stunning, most of the time in the plant world, it's got a real skinny window that it actually blooms and looks good in.
Yeah,
they do hold their flowers for a while, though.
They do. It has three on it right now, and one more to come up on that shoot. And then there's a second shoot that should start to have the flowers here very soon. So
look at you in that green thumb. All right.
I know. Well, I don't know what the heck happened. Somebody sneaked into my house in the middle of the night and took care
of it. We're getting you learned.
Yes, you are. Speaking of that, Matt, you're going to get people learned, aren't you?
I am. I get to find, we did we're always brainstorming how to get younger help into our industry as a whole, and good help's hard to find. That's in every industry, but even more so in ours than a lot of others, because it is physical work. It's hard work. You got to find somebody that likes to be outside, wants to work in the elements, and then still has an interest in the plant material as well. So we're actually going to be teaching. I'm going down teaching a class at Jackson Horticultural High School's program here next Tuesday on aquaculture and fish health. And then I'll be teaching a couple classes over at Glen Oak High School on the following Tuesday, and then I've got a community college I'm going to be teaching at in March. So
nice.
Trying to attract some of that younger help and set us as experts in the industry, let these young kids know that we're looking for the bright ones, and try to get them as part of our team.
Yeah, and it's a great industry. I mean, you know, I honestly, Matt, because maybe just because I've been around you guys so much and you enjoy it so much and it's important to you, but it's a great industry. It's very
people that do this are passionate about it. I mean, we're not let's face it, we're not here for the money. We're here because we enjoy what we do. We love what we do, and you're helping people every day, and you're really helping them save money in the long run. While our plant stock may cost a little bit more than what you'll pay at Mark's or Giant Eagle for their plants that are out on the sidewalk, you're getting an education when you come in here, and you're only going to plant it once. You're not going to put that shade plant in a sun area, because we're going to give you that information that you need to be successful. So,
yeah, and to have that passion, like when, you know, recruiting the young ones, or really just anybody, you know, if you have that passion and that willingness to learn, you know, that's everything, and everything else can fall into play, you know. So to have that's really,
honestly,
really good thing.
If you want to, even if you don't want to get into that as a career, if you want to become like the Al Leno of the world, you know, and you enjoy your garden and all that kind of thing,
it's very therapeutic.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's a lost art. And we do see a lot of younger customers coming in, that being said. And I love that, you know, seeing the younger generations and how they get excited about plants and, you know.
Yeah, they like to be self-sustainable, so they like to grow their vegetables and things
like
that.
And a lot of people don't get into this part of their lives until they buy their first home. So that comes along with it. You learn a whole lot of stuff when you get your first home, and part of home ownership is learning how to take care of it, if you like it or if you don't.
Exactly. Yeah, how to take care of the outside. Yeah,
exactly.
100%. Well, I also, I bookmarked this story because it happened, I think this would be last week, January 7th, officially. We have talked about it several times, but worth mentioning again, the pear tree situation, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that should have gone into effect, or will go into effect here at the sometime in the month of January.
January 7th, it happened on January 7th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Flowering pear trees are no longer allowed to be sold in the state of Ohio. Now, I believe fruiting pears are still allowed.
Yes.
But the flowering
pear
trees, which would be Cleveland Select, Chanticleer, Bradford, New Bradford, Red Spire, there's quite a few different varieties, Aristocrat. All those varieties are no longer allowed to be sold in the state. And it is to protect the native trees that are here and the animals that feed on that native material. Because as non-native material comes in, if it's invasive, it takes over property and grounds. And we're not talking on a small scale here. We're looking at a statewide scale, millions upon millions of acres. You change that plantscape, and it changes what animals can survive and thrive in that landscape. So the state is doing what it needs to do to keep us healthy.
And that happens, like, you know, every so many years they go through and they decide which things are, you know, invasive, and then they take them away, and we slowly eradicate. And there are a lot of invasive things that are hard to control. So it's important that we, you know, do our due diligence and not plant those.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that has a lot of people disappointed because they love those trees.
But there are alternatives.
There are alternatives.
They always come up with something, or at least try.
Yep. Serviceberry is a native plant here.
Yes.
And serviceberry are almost always, not always, but almost always grown in a multi-stem or a clump.
I love serviceberry.
A clump form. So it doesn't have that look of a single trunk pear tree. But there are some growers in the last 5 years, knowing that this was coming, that have grown those trees in a single trunk version. And while they're young, they have a very similar look to a pear tree. And now here's a plant that's native that's going to help benefit the wildlife in our area and still have
the birds love
look.
It. The birds love serviceberry, so it's food for them.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
And I would say, Matt, that the people who have them already, you know, planted them a long time ago, obviously they don't have to dig them out or anything like that, right?
No. Everything that's here is grandfathered in. The pear tree is also one of the flowering trees. It probably has a shorter lifespan than a lot of the other trees and shrubs that are out there. I would say most of the time, 25 to 30 years, and that's the life of that pear tree. And then you'll see them start to self-destruct, basically. Their branching starts to fall apart. They're not a long-lived tree, but again, it is a tree that flowers super impressive every year. You have to literally do almost zero pruning to it. There's very few insects or diseases that affect it. So it's been an easy tree, but as time goes on here, we're looking for alternatives. There's the serviceberry tree, an ivory silk lilac tree. There are some other white flowering trees that will have that, not exactly a perfect match to a pear tree, but similar. And so there are some alternatives that we've got coming in here already and in place coming in again this spring to help ease that burden of not having a pear tree anymore. And some of the associations that are out there, this is what really needs to happen this time of year. There's some associations, the heads of allotments, that basically when you buy a lot, you have to put a pear tree here and here when you buy your lot. That has to change. So anybody out there that's listening, that's on boards, if you have pear trees that have to be planted in your allotment, that needs to be addressed by the association and look at one of the alternatives, and they can call us here at the nursery and we'll work with them to find something that would be a good fit or a good match as an alternative.
And we're not the only state. I mean, this isn't happening in all 50 states, but we aren't the only ones, right?
No, actually, if you look nationwide, New York has the most stringent planting policies of what you're allowed to bring in, what you're allowed to plant. They do a pretty good job of protecting their native area, and we do follow suit a lot of times with the East Coast as that makes its way west.
Because you have to think there's a lot of areas that are untouched, you know, that the birds get to, you know, that are taking seeds and that, you know, disrupts the forests and that kind of thing, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's obviously, it'll be a big deal for some people, and especially if they don't realize it. You know what I mean? It just, if they don't have any idea that it's happening. But of course, obviously, you guys will, you know, if somebody comes looking for one, you're going to say,
Yep. And if you happen to buy stuff online, here's one of the dangers of also buying things online. not all online companies know our laws and regulations state by state. They're supposed to. They're supposed to monitor all that and update that. But as it changes, how quickly is that adjusted on those companies? And if you get caught bringing one of those into the states, the fine is extremely hefty. So, again, this is where buying from somebody that has the education and knowledge to help you be successful is very important.
All right, let's go. We're going to go to the phones now. Again, if you want to give us a call, 330-450-1480. That is the number to call. Send an email to pcook@whbc.com. All right, we've got Eric and Maslin. You're on the air with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing from Roar?
Good, how are you?
Doing good.
Well, I'm doing well. I have a question about the pear trees. Now, is a Cleveland the same as a Bradford?
Yep. It's an improved version of the Bradford, but they are in that list that is no longer allowed to be planted in the state.
Okay, copy that. They get much bigger than the regular Bradford, right?
They're a little more slower growing, which makes sure they're branching a little harder, which one of the problems with the pear trees is that if you would get a late season snow after the foliage would come on, the branching was weak in the crotch where it attached, where the branch actually attaches to the trunk of the tree, and it would peel and break apart. The Clevelands were much, much stronger than a Bradford, but they still fall in that same category. Now, the growers are working on creating a pear tree that grows on its own rootstock that will be able to be sold, but we're still probably 7 years out from seeing that go into production and then actually hit the store shelves for sale.
Right on. I work in service, so I've taken care of a bunch of Bradford pears.
Yes, sir. You're familiar with trimming them up when they get some storm damage, huh?
Yeah, so self-trimming, I always say.
Yeah. As they get older. And a lot of people don't realize how broad they get. So the pear tree is really narrow and kind of elliptical, has like a football standing on end kind of a shape to it as it grows when it's young. But as it ages, it broadens significantly, gets quite a bit wider than it is when it's young.
Right. The wood's so damn heavy.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Any other questions, Eric?
Okay, no, thanks. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for the call. Yeah. We appreciate it. All right, so yeah, the pear tree, we knew that was probably going to, I'm glad we mentioned it, and we'll keep it out there in front of everybody. So, because some people, we talked about this quite a bit before, but really have not had too much of a conversation about it, and it just took effect officially January 7th, so.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take our first break. And again, if anyone wants to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. 330-450-1480. That's the number to call. All right, it is a Thursday morning, and it is Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center, our weekly call-in show. Matt and Rachel here with me this morning. I'm talking about the pear trees that are no more and some other things, too. So what's going on at the nursery, Matt? What kind of things are happening that are keeping you busy?
I'm super thankful. We're starting to finally get the last trickling in of the last few confirmations that we put orders for these plants back in July, August. And now we're finally getting the confirmations back, which usually come in before Thanksgiving. So there's a lot of industries that are running behind. We are one of those as well. And our confirmations are coming back a little better than expected. So it looks like we're going to have really nice quality stock in here for spring. I'm super thankful. Sometimes when they're dragging their feet and sending you those confirmations, you're like, oh, am I getting anything? And the nerves set in, and then you finally start to see the numbers come back this year, and they look pretty good. So I'm excited for that. And we're doing things like having meetings, talking about staffing, who's going to do what for the next year. You look at the numbers that you made in different areas and where does your focus need to be as you go forward. It's the business kind of stuff of the, it's the boring stuff.
I hear you. I hear you.
Packing up Christmas and getting rid of that.
Yeah, gosh. Rachel, how long does that take you guys to do that? There's so much there.
I mean, they got a pretty good system going, but it takes some time. It does, because we have to separate things, too, that because we use stuff like pottery and things that we can use for spring. And you know, so there's that whole transition again. So there's a lot of cleanup. I always laugh. I always feel like it's like we move, like it's like moving every year, you know, because you're packing everything up in boxes and you're taking it back out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like everybody, it's like what we do at home, right?
Basically, yeah, just on a bigger scale.
On a monster scale. Right.
And I'll tell you, there was beautiful sunshine. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. I don't know what day it was, but anyway. And I got outside to pick up the tree limbs because there were just massive amounts of tree limbs in the yard. It was so muddy.
How often do you get to go outside in a hoodie in January and be comfortable doing some work around a house? Doesn't happen too often.
It does
It's happened a couple times, I feel like.
Yeah,
it
felt great.
I just hope we don't pay for this in March.
I agree with you 100%, and I'm hoping that that is the case as well.
It's going to be mild all the way through. I mean, we can get nasty in February if it needs to, but by March, I need it to chill out a little bit because there's lots of trucks coming.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's it. You get like a little bit of rest and get prepared for all of that. All right. We're going to go back to the phones here. We have Julia in Perry. You are on with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm going to do some advertising for Roar's. I am so excited. I went in there yesterday and got a package of 5 bulbs, of hyacinth bulbs, and I just put them in water. I've already started one that I got for Christmas, and just in water, and they just make my room just smell so well. So, and everybody's so friendly there. I live in a house in a place where I can't do outside gardening, but I can do inside gardening, and so I am just overly thrilled.
Oh, well, thank you. That's great to hear. I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You must have been earlier in the morning yesterday. I had my pup in here yesterday. I've got a fox red Labrador, and he came to work with me yesterday. I was leaving.
You were just leaving when I got there, about 10 o'clock.
Yeah, probably.
There was a truck pulling out at about 10 o'clock when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And but the ladies were so helpful, and I'm just so excited because I can do this inside, you know. So anyway,
yeah, it makes a great. It's so nice to have that color and that smell this time of year in the house. So that's awesome.
I don't have to buy any room for fresheners. So thank you.
And thank you.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
You too. Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right, we are. You know, when I think about that, and when she said she doesn't have the space to do any, you know, outside stuff. Which, you know, is that there are a lot of people that are like that still love, you know, to have something. That's a great option, right?
Well, and for her, everybody's situation is a little bit different. A lot of places you can't have a garden per se out in the flower bed or in the earth itself. Container gardens become really popular for people that, say, maybe don't own a home or rent or are in a condo where there's a lot of rules. Most of the time they're pretty lax on the containers because containers can be moved and placed in different areas. So you can always check with your association if you can have the container gardens, and you can produce vegetables, you can produce all kinds of beautiful plant material in the containers and then rotate them out a season at a time. So you always have that fresh spot of color in the landscape.
Well, you know, it's getting close. I'm lucky, like I said, I have the amaryllis, and that makes it feel, you know, very, like you said, adds a little bit of zip to the indoor space right now. But
hope for spring.
Yep. Yes. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right. We'll take our break now for the news. And, of course, when we come back, you can certainly give us a call at 330-450-1480. You can email me, pcook@whbc.com. It's Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. All right, 9:33 on your Thursday morning, and I'm gonna send to both of you a picture of the amaryllis. Matt and Rachel here from Roar's, and I have a couple on my phone just to give you an idea of what it looks like because it's pretty spectacular. It's pretty nice. Anyway, so I was talking a little earlier about, you know, going outside, obviously, and picking up the, you know, all the tree limbs that fell down. One thing I did notice, Matt, was that there was this big, giant, you know, brown spot in the yard. What's that from?
Do you have dogs?
I do not have dogs. I'm a cat girl.
Okay.
That's where mine are from.
Yeah, that's where mine are from, too. So. So there are certain areas of our yard, whether it be because of a septic system, different soil substrate underneath, where nutrients doesn't hold as long behind. It doesn't mean that grass is dead. I've seen a lot of times where the top of the grass will go dormant in a specific area. And what it has to do is the soil that's underneath. What is it holding nutrients? Does it hold nutrients as long as the grass surrounding that area? So core aerating that next fall, which is where you take the plugs kind of out of the soil and adding some organic material back down in there, it'll help hold nutrients in that area longer. If somebody had reseeded 10 years ago or 5 years ago, maybe before you owned that home, and they used a different style grass seed in there. There are certain grass seeds that do brown in the winter and come back in the spring. So there's a lot of different factors that could cause that. There are a few funguses that can grow, but I don't know that we've been really warm enough to get a lot of that this time of year. We'll see more of that come, say, March and early April.
Okay. And it is, it's large. You know, I mean, it's not like, you know, like a dog would leave a spot.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's pretty big. It's pretty big. So.
Yeah, there's something going on in that soil, whether it's not holding enough, the same amount of nutrients, unless somebody fertilized and didn't fertilize in that area. But there's some missing nutrients in that soil, whether the soil couldn't hold the nutrients or the nutrients was never applied to that area. Most of the time it's soils, the soil in our area can change from a dense clay to a very sandy, rocky soil and very short area. So sometimes it's just that, or it's the type of grass seed that was seeded in that area. I would always recommend those areas that you're struggling and having problems with, overseed in the springtime, not now. You want to wait till probably middle of April, beginning of April, and put some fresh grass seed down in those areas. But whenever you put fresh grass seed down, you do not want to use step one that's got a pre-emergent. Because anything that kills crabgrass, most of the chemicals that kill crabgrass will also kill grass seeds. There are some smart chemicals that know the difference between grass seeds and crabgrass seeds and will only kill the weed seeds. But you need to know what you're putting down in that area so you don't kill that grass seed that you overseed that area with.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. And, you know, and like I said, also, as I was walking through, it was very muddy. It was really pretty muddy out there.
And certain areas are going to pocket and hold water because of the soil underneath. That's why next fall we maybe look at core aerating that area and take the plugs out of the ground. It'll let the air down in the ground so the soil can dry out quicker. It helps with drainage. And then you can also incorporate a little sand or peat down after you do that core aeration, and it'll help build a better soil underneath for the grass to continue to grow and thrive.
Okay. So what other things should we be doing right now as we're getting ready for the spring season?
So I have not trimmed my roses back. So I was looking at that this morning before I left the house. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do a light trim on these roses. There's not a ton of outside work that can get done right now. I've got something called variegated liriope. It looks very similar to a daylily in its growth habit. Ends up maybe a foot tall and gets purple flowers later in the year, like in July, August. Kind of by the time the daylilies look like, this still looks good. And it has a much later bloom, or blooms much later in the year than the daylilies do. Those are technically supposed to be semi-evergreen up here, which means on a mild winter, it'll keep its foliage. On a bad winter, it'll lose its foliage. Well, that really cold that we had a few weeks ago just cooked the tops on these plants. I could go out there and trim those to like maybe a 2-inch stubble. And then as the growth comes back in the spring, it grows right back up over that stubble and you can't see it. Or I can leave that go until spring because it does create a layer of protection, almost like insulation on top of the crown of the plant. But that plant is extremely hardy anyway, so at 6 of 1, 6 of 2 under the other.
Yeah.
Depends on how motivated I get.
Yeah, funky being in the house, you know, that's a lot of it, you know, but.
All right, I'm going to jump to the phones here because we have Kay waiting for us. Kay in Canton, you are on with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I have roses of Sharon planted. I would say they're planted a foot away from the house at this time. And I was concerned about the root system. Is planting those too close to the foundation doing any harm to the foundation as far as pressing in against it or causing the foundation to shift?
It should not. That plant is a plant that gets somewhere in the 5 to 7 to 8 to 10 foot tall. The bigger the plant gets, the more large the root system is. It has to be to keep it upright. I mean, it's kind of like
to balance there. Yeah,
balance it out. So I would say that's a medium sized plant. Plants like that probably shouldn't have an issue pushing a foundation in on a house. A foot is really close to the house. How long have they been in the ground?
Probably 15 years.
Okay, so that's not something. If it had been in the ground 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 years, I would have you dig them up in the spring and move them out. A plant that has been there that long, if it hasn't affected the foundation at this point, it's probably unlikely that it's going to. They do have a very fibrous root system. Now, if that plant was a plant that was going to get 25 to 35 or 40 foot tall, it has to come out. But being what it is, it's a type of shrub. It has a fibrous root system. I can't guarantee anything, but it should be. It should not affect that foundation negatively as long as it's a decent foundation.
Okay. We also had a flowering crab tree.
Yes.
And I guess it gets, 25 feet tall? But we kept pruning it every year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about its roots? We've cut it way back because it's starting to die off.
Okay.
But if we completely take this tree down to the ground, we thought that would be best to leave the root system in there because of tearing it out would create tunnels of water getting down.
So one of the things you can do, it's some effort, but one of the things you can do is out from the trunk of that tree, maybe 3 to 4 feet, depending on how far away you have from the house. I'm envisioning this tree, you know, being at least 8 to 10 feet out from the house. How far away from the house is it?
Well, when we planted it, we planted it 5 foot away from the foundation.
Okay. All right. So if you do choose to take this tree out and replace it with something else, I would dig that root system out. You probably don't want to go in there and pull on it with a big dump truck, and because, like you said, the roots on a tree that old can have grown back towards the foundation. But if you take a shovel or a spade or a digging axe and you get down into the ground like 18 inches, usually if you're down 18 inches to 2 foot, you're cutting 99% of the roots, and you should be able to get that tree out. It's more important to cut the roots on the back side between the tree and the house than it is the front side. But if you dig it all the way around in a circle, maybe come out from the trunk 2 feet, 3 feet in that general area, and then cut a circle down into the soil all the way around, you're severing 90% of the roots that way, and it should make it much easier to get out.
Okay. Does the root systems keep growing after you've taken the whole top off?
If you cut it down to the ground and do not remove what the core of the plant, a lot of times, not always, a lot of times, that plant will do what's called sucker growth right out of the stump. And it will try to regrow and come back. So removing that trunk where it goes into the soil itself will prevent that from happening. You're not going to get suckers coming up from the root system any distance away from that.
Okay.
It's more common with cherries. I mean, it can happen with crab apples, but as long as you're taking the vast majority of the root system out of there, or at least the base of the root system where the trunk goes into the ground, most of the time you're not going to have an issue with that coming back. And if you do, spritz around up here or there on those suckers as they come back up from the root system, one spray usually is enough to knock it out.
Okay. Do you have any kind of a product that we can put on the the part that's in the ground?
There is a stump rotting product that we do carry that'll help rot that stump over a period of time. Again, if you leave that stump in there, you probably are going to have to spray that stump because it is going to probably sucker and try to push growth up because the root system's large enough to keep that huge tree alive. So when you cut it off at the ground, the active growing part of the plant's right there at the base of the ground, and it's going to probably try to regenerate growth. Again, not always. There's nothing in nature that is 100% of the time. There's always exceptions, but that product that you can drill holes into that stump and put this product in will help rot that stump much quicker. And if you do get any regrowth from like suckers that are like little shoots that start to come up, you can spray those with Roundup, and it'll draw that chemical back down and kill the root system of the tree, but won't affect other plants growing around it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome. Anytime you've got questions like that, you can always stop into the nursery, bring a picture in. Sometimes that picture is worth a million words to us, and we can kind of give you the absolute best advice when we see exactly what's going on.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right, very good. Thank you for the call. Yes, appreciate it. Well, you know, she's thinking ahead. That's a good thing.
Yep. And that's what this time of year is for, you know, planning, yeah. Preparation. We have a lot of people that come in this time of year that know they're going to do a project in July, August, September. And that's really now is when you want to come in and get that set up. We are already booking out into the early summer months. So if it's, you have a project you want to work on this next summer, now is that time. Get in here. Your designers have more time to work with you right now than any other time of the year.
Yeah, and you do have, you're looking out the window, you know, and you almost have more of like a blank canvas kind of, because everything's pretty dormant and you can kind of see and plot and plan a little bit and with the downtime.
And I look at my magnolia tree, and I know I've said this before, but, you know, without any leaves on it, and it just looks at, you know, it just, it's crazy to look at it. The difference between, you know, once the leaves come and we see the buds, you know.
So this is a good time of year. Maybe it's a little early yet, but as we get closer to the springtime, you can do some pruning on some of these trees. Now, if you prune on a magnolia, you are going to cut the blooms off. The blooms are already set for the following spring. But sometimes it's worth sacrificing a little bit of the flowering of a plant for a single year to get the structure and the shape you want. The other option is to wait till right when it's done blooming and then put a trim on it. Okay. But if you put the trim on it before the leaves come, you can really develop the shape and the structure of that plant. I've got a magnolia off the corner of my house. I planted, it was a 3 gallon and about 24 to 30 inches tall when I planted it. It is up to the gutters of the single story house now. I put it in the ground in 2001. And the last couple of years, now it's got to the size that I want it to be. I've been pruning on it pretty aggressively. And the plant has really thickened up and filled out quite a bit more than it was all the years that it was naturally growing there without a lot of pruning.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go back to the phones, of course, so we know we're going to get a phone call here from Al in Plain Township. We were talking about you earlier this morning, sir.
Oh, boy. Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning.
You know, Matt, you were spot on about the younger couples buying a home and then getting involved in landscaping. And my son is a prime example. You know, I was a little worried. I thought, boy, I hope he loves yard work. I hope he really takes it seriously. And I have to tell you, he loves it, and I'm so proud of him. You have to see how beautiful his yard and his landscaping is. And again, I don't work for Roar, so anybody thinks that I work for Roar, but I have to. But all of his stuff is from Roar. It's everything, nothing died. Everything is absolutely beautiful. He knows how to trim. He knows how to prune. He knows how to fertilize. You know, he knows everything. His yard is perfect. I'm so proud because he's taken a liking to it. And that's the key thing with gardening. If you don't like it, you're in trouble. But once you start taking a liking and loving it, you're going to become a good gardener because it's
And how many young people, even myself included, I mean, I got forced to do a lot of work in a vegetable garden when I was a kid, but I didn't really do a lot of landscaping around my house. My dad kind of took care of that and my mom. And so I didn't really deal with a lot of that until I had my first house. And there is so much that's changed since I was a kid and my parents were doing landscaping. There was like 30 plants to choose from. I mean, there was more than that back then, but you know what I mean. The new introduction of plant material and what's available now is exponentially greater than what it was for my parents' generation. So there's a lot to learn and know. And that's why coming to a place like Roar's is going to help you, because we're going to guide you to the plants you're going to have success with.
Absolutely. And that's what he did. He took all that, you know, it was an older house. And you remember the old years ago, the shrubs that were, they used like 30 years ago.
Used the burning bush. That was it. They planted a whole house in that.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. He ripped all that out, and then when he went to Roar's, boy, they just perfectly landscaped, you know, gave me all the ideas. Now, he planted all of them himself, but he bought everything there, and he followed exactly the way he was supposed to put it. And that, it's beautiful. So I'm proud of him. But you're right. The younger generation, if you start liking it and loving it, you're going to do that. Anyways, real quick, my call. Do you, you know, I'm doing something new this year. Two things. Number one, I'm going to start, I'm going to start irrigating my flowers and my garden. The watering takes forever. We know that. I mean, last year I was watering the front yard 2.5 hours, the backyard 2.5 hours, trying to get the garden. That's all you're doing. You are watering. So I want to start doing some type of an irrigation system. Number one, will you guys or do you sell any type of a system that could water all of my plants and flowers? I know people can put them on timers. Will you have something like that?
We actually have a division of Roar's Nursery. It's in our landscape division that is specializes just in irrigation. Josh is incredible. He knows everything as far as yards, water demands on the different shrubs. He can look at your soil, tell how many hours those irrigation needs to run in each area to make sure because if you have clay, you don't need to run your irrigation near as long as if you have sand. So he takes a look at all those things and can help you design an irrigation system that'll work for you. If you're just talking about flowers and landscape beds and stuff around the house, then drip irrigation is a lot of times the way we go in those areas. And yes, it can be done with timers, and we've got the product here that we can help you with that, no problem. So that is just definitely something to have him or come in and talk to the nursery about. We'll set up an appointment with Josh, have him come out and take a look at it and see if we can get you on the right path to saving some time and doing more fun stuff instead of the maintenance stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You start getting older, you get wiser, and I'm thinking, you know what, time is everything right now. And
again, absolutely.
I enjoy watering, but hey, 2 hours here, 2 hours, 4 hours is a lot. So
yeah, that's a lot.
All of a sudden, you got a 20-hour week, and you got to do it again next week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. We're familiar.
Yeah.
So, hey, Al, since I got you on the phone, what do you think about Northwest Wrestling Program this year?
Northwest always has a great wrestling program. Northwest is a good wrestling team, and they have a great tradition. And again, when they always had that tournament, I always loved their noodles, the famous noodles. But Northwest has always been a great wrestling. They do an outstanding job.
I'm going to be out there next Friday, not this Friday, but a week from tomorrow. They got a home match. It starts at 4:00 and should be pretty fun. I think they're doing 4 schools that night. Sometimes the invitationals can get grueling. They're all day or all weekend. This is going to be a nice one, just 4 schools. I think we're doing Maslin. I can't remember the name of all the different schools we're doing, but we're doing 4 different schools that night. So it'll be a good chance for if anybody local is looking to get out of the house and do something fun on a Friday afternoon, evening. I think it starts at 4:00 next Friday.
Next Friday, and we're talking middle school, we're talking to varsity, aren't we? High school.
High
right?
school.
We're talking to high school, yep.
We got to take a break, guys. We got to take a break. We're running out of time.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, no, no.
Matt, I might show up there, Matt, because my son coaches wrestling for Maslin.
Very good. Very good.
Oh, all right.
We'll talk again next week.
Take care.
Okay. Not you and Rachel and Matt, hang on because I'll be back. This will be our last break before we say goodbye. You're listening to Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. All right, our final segment. We're getting ready to wrap things up. Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. And I did send over the pictures of the amaryllis, which, Matt, you'll take a look at and we'll talk about next week.
It is beautiful. I got it. It's gorgeous.
Good, yeah. And like I said, I think the coloring of it doesn't show up as much in the picture, but they're giant. They're giant. Yeah. So,
pretty
cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. All right, Matt, so what else, as we wrap things up, people should start looking in their garage, right? Go out in your garage and take a look around.
Yeah, it's not terribly cold. So, spend a few hours outside. Look at the things that make your list right now, the things that need to be addressed. So, having your mower maintenance done. If you wait till April to take your mower in, it could be 6 weeks, 8 weeks before you see it back. So, this is a time of year to be proactive about that. And a lot of times the mower shops in the winters have deals. Where they can either pick them up or drop them off. Each company is going to be unique there, but get that handle, get the blade sharpened, oil change, air filters change. That way that piece of equipment is going to run flawless for you when you need it. It's a good time to sharpen hedge pruners, chainsaw blades, weed eaters, do all the maintenance on this equipment. Now, when we have the time, that way the spring, things are going to be so much smoother. You're going to be able to enjoy instead of having headache after headache. It's all about the preparation.
Absolutely. All right. Give us a location and all the information.
We have 2 Roar's Nursery locations, 5357 Everhard Road in Canton and 7211 Portage Street in Maslin.
All right. Talk to you guys next Thursday.
All right. Bye-bye.